Hello, my favorite people. We're here at Cal State Los Angeles with the fantastic Lisa Baxter. Huge fan of hers. Lisa Baxter, you heard her Saturday during the Small Talk podcast. Yeah. And I must say, Lisa Baxter, you are a fantastic woman. Very successful, very professional, very kind, very compassionate. I am just blessed to know you, and so welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh, well, thank you. Wow, that was amazing. Thank you so much. I really am a big fan of yours as well, and I really appreciate this opportunity to, you know, speak to your audience and your fans, and I'm very honored and humbled.
Well, I think this fits in with you perfectly because you are of service, and this is about being of service and helping people find their voice and get comfortable in their skin so they can be more comfortable in their skin, like I said, but also be of service and learn how to present and to speak with confidence and comfort.
Right.
And authenticity.
Yes.
Which we talked about a lot on Saturday.
Exactly.
And seems to be the key.
Exactly. It is. It definitely is. Because if you're not speaking from the heart, then it's like, why even try it? You know? So
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
And we're going to be spreading that word.
Yes. That's our gospel.
So tell me your full name.
Lisa Joanne Baxter.
Yay. And you are from?
LA. I'm actually an LA native, which is very rare. I know whenever I tell somebody that, they're like, wow, you're like a unicorn. I know it's like really crazy. My husband, he's from Michigan. So it's like, yeah, it's like whenever I say I'm from LA, they're like, really? So that's really been amazing to, you know, to be born and raised here. I love LA.
But you're from a really great part of LA.
Yeah, I'm from South Central Los Angeles.
Woo-hoo! South Central in the house.
Yes, I know. And it was so awesome growing up there. And it's funny because I've moved back recently with the past year. Mm-hmm. And just to, you know, recall my childhood and now coming back, it's like it's all come together. And I see how rich and wonderful my community is and how much it really helped to support who I am and build who I am. And I'm just so thankful, you know, for that. And so that's why I'm coming back into my community and doing the best that I can to do something good and give back. And it's really exciting. And, you know, my family is, you know, they're immigrants. My mom was from Belize, San Ignacio. My dad is from La Ceiba, Honduras. So I am Afro-Latina.
Wow. Wow. There's temper in that. I'm always going to stay on your good side, sister.
So, you know, that part of growing up was so amazing because it was just so, we were always immersed in our culture. You know, both my parents my mom, rest in peace, my dad, he still has his accent. So we grew up around all that and the food and the celebration. You celebrated everything, whether it's somebody leaving, somebody coming, baptisms, like you party all the time. And that's probably why I really like partied a lot during my college and my later years, because it's just such a celebration is a part of who I am. And it's a part of our tradition and history. So
in that vein, so tell me, what was your favorite part of growing up?
Ooh.
Of growing up and where you grew up. You kind of answered it, but I want to dive in deeper.
The fact that it was so full of different people. And what I mean by that is like the only stepfather, you know, I've had all my maternal, paternal, those grandfathers, I never met them. So the only grandfather I ever knew, he was a 6 foot tall Irish man named John Sullivan.
Nice.
And so having that, and then also having family from Nicaragua and Mexico and just, you know, Belize and all those places, I felt like it really just gave me a different lens into the world. Like even right now, my husband's Cambodian. I have a family that my mother-in-law's Caucasian. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like it's such a gumbo.
It's
like
beautiful.
We say the little United Nations, you
right?
know. So that was always great. And I think the one thing that I remember the most is my parents were so deeply embedded in the Catholic faith. And so Christmas Eve, like we would go to midnight mass, the entire family would go, and then we'd come home and eat some tamales. And so, you know, y'all know who I'm talking about, you know, we'd eat tamales and, you know, we'd have eggnog and all of that. And we'd just sit and be with each other, open up gifts. And of course, all the kids would be upset because they were like, well, why are we here? You know, if we keep on, if we stay up, then Santa's not going to come. So that's like the one memory I can think of, and especially with this season upon us, that was just, it was so awesome to me because I just love all of us getting together and you know, being family.
It's a yeah. beautiful thing. And as I grow older, I appreciate it even more.
Yeah. So. No, and no, it is. And it's also great because it helps me to hold, well, my mom passed away on Christmas Eve. So
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was, you know, and just remembering those good times really makes it a lot easier and a lot more, just a lot more fun, you know, just to think about the good times. So, yeah.
That's a very positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. It took me a while to get there, though. I will tell you, I didn't want to hear not one Christmas carol or anything like that when she passed away in 2010. But now, and especially because I have my son, it's taken on a different meaning, and I know she wouldn't want us to be sad or anything like that. A matter of fact, on Saturday, we're going to have a posadas, and it's going to be in her honor, and so that's going to be really nice to celebrate
that. Oh, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Are you keeping it real? I like it. So what is your favorite food?
Ooh, my favorite ultimate food is macaroni and cheese.
Oh, you and Marla have to start a club.
Yes. Like, oh my gosh. I just want to eat all the macaroni and cheese in the world just to see which is the best. I still don't know which is the best, but I mean, I have a couple people that can really throw down. I myself am not a cook, so, you know, I have to lean on everybody else's expertise, but I love that. And my favorite food hands down is like Mexican food. So enchiladas, like, oh my goodness. And the real Mexican food. I'm not talking about Tito's Tacos and Taco Bell and all that. I'm talking about the real deal Mexican food.
Okay.
That, I love it.
Where do you get that in LA?
Man, well, mostly just family members, or you know, you might find a couple of you know, taco trucks that really can get down and
you
give you the authentic.
The hood, get it.
Yes,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
you do. Exactly.
Because trust me, on the west side, it's just no. And then you find a good place that sells a good burrito, and it's like it's $12.95. I'm like, okay, that costs you 5 cents to make.
Exactly.
And I'm not paying you that, so
it's not real.
What is your favorite word? I love asking that question. What is your favorite word? Just one word.
Overflow.
Really?
Yeah, because it means abundance. It's like I'm ready for my overflow, meaning all the blessings that God has for me. So overflow, it represents abundance and there's no lack. So just overflow. I love it.
What is your favorite book?
Ooh, one of my favorite books. I love to read. Right now I'm actually reading Michelle Obama's Becoming.
Nice.
But my favorite that I always remember is Eva Luna by Isabel Allende.
Okay.
I just love that book. I don't know why. It's just because I think it's because it spans so many decades, and it just talked about the main character from the time she was born until she, you know, until she was an adult. And it was just a really intriguing and wonderful story. So I think that's my favorite, one of my favorite books.
What's your favorite movie that pops to the top of your head?
The Color Purple.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's an emotional toll for me.
Yeah.
And I saw the musical, and I cried in the musical. Everyone looked at me.
Yeah.
And certain people cried because they got it, and then certain people didn't, you know.
Right.
But I actually bought the t-shirt, Hell No, and I wear it constantly because I'm like, Hell No. Mm-mm, no more.
Yeah, there's so many, and it's funny because every time I see it, I see something new, which is really interesting. Yeah, but that has been like one of my favorite movies that I come back to all the time. And then, of course, I have my campy movies like Valley Girls with Nicolas Cage. That was his first movie.
That's
I don't know if you remember that.
Oh my God. I wanted to live in the Valley. I was living in Southgate. I'm like, I want to move to the Valley.
I love that movie. Like, everybody laughs at me, but I'm like, I don't care. That's like my favorite, one of my favorite.
Especially when you're from
movies.
LA, you really get it.
Yeah.
And the music is fantastic in that movie.
Yes, it is. So
that was before like Spotify and all that stuff. And I remember one of my friends here from Cal State LA, we went looking for all the albums.
Oh my God.
And we actually went and found every single album and created our own playlist.
Awesome. Isn't that crazy how you had to do that back in the day and make your own little mixtapes and all that?
You'd like someone, here's a mixtape.
Yes, exactly.
What makes you laugh?
Oh my goodness, my son. My son Bishop is hilarious. He's like 4 going on 20. And sometimes the things that he says and does is just hilarious. I just love to be around people that are happy. And because my job is as much as I love it, it's very demanding.
Yes,
and I have a lot of responsibility. And so I have to stay focused. And you know, sometimes you have to be kind of what I call a dream killer, you know, because you have to, you know, say, okay, how much is that going to cost? I mean, mm-hmm. that's awesome, you know. So it's really an interesting shift. So anytime I can watch comedies, you know, and just
what stand-up comic makes you? Oh my gosh, memes. That's a whole other level.
Yeah, sometimes I'll spend time on the internet just laughing at memes. And I kind of have like a dry sense of humor in a sense, but not like I like Chelsea Handler and
I
love Kevin Hart. You know, folks like that, like Adam Sandler, I just saw he did this thing called, what is it? My keys, wallet. And so he did some rap, recently that I thought was hilarious. So, you know, people like that make me laugh.
What do you think of Cat Williams?
Cat Williams is hilarious. Oh my
goodness. He's like, he keeps it real kind of down low, dirty,
yes,
kind of funny.
And
so
his,
we're not related. Just let you know.
Yeah. His humor is really funny as well. So he's like one of my top five as well. But yeah, it's like sometimes I laugh at things that maybe other people wouldn't laugh at.
You have a great sense of humor, by the way.
And I think, too, it's because the way that I grew up, you know, everybody would rag on you. They would talk about you all the time. So it's like I always either had to be on the defense or like have us, you know, be really quick-witted. So, yeah, I just laugh at a lot of things.
I think you have a fantastic sense of humor, not just because you laugh at what I say,
right.
but I've seen you in different environments and you have a great sense of humor. And it's such a gift of survival and pleasure and generosity.
Yeah, survival is a good word for it.
Yep. As I tilt my head and look at her and roll my
right.
and give her the eye, the side eye. So I know you are a professional director of development fundraiser. Mm-hmm. I want to know, how did you become a fundraiser?
Ooh, you know how they say God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies those who he calls. So I would really say it's my calling. For some people, you know, there's jobs, and other people, there's walking in your purpose. And I really do feel that I'm walking in my purpose. You know, I've been many things. I've been a teacher. I've been, you know, I'm still a Kundalini yoga teacher at heart. But I've been a, you know, writer and all these things. And all of those things added to me becoming a fundraiser, and it led to me becoming a fundraiser. And when I initially became a fundraiser, that was when I started out as technically I was an administrative support at Children's Hospital Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I was supposed to be doing. And I was just there for a while the person who I was filling in for was getting married and doing all that stuff. And then it was just a temporary gig. But then they were like, well, we need someone to fundraise too. And I'm like, okay. Didn't know what the hell I was doing. You should have seen what I wore to my first donor meeting. I mean, just, you know, that's why I'm so big on mentorship and just kind of helping to guide our young professionals, because I did not have that, and I fell down many, many times and had to get myself back up. But, you know, they said, hey, you got to fundraise. And, you know, instead of sinking, I guess I swam. And,
yes, you did.
You know,
right to the top.
Figured it out. And so it's like 10, now it's going on 11 years later. So, you know, obviously I feel like I know a little bit of what I'm doing, but I'm always learning, always trying to figure out how to refine, always trying to figure out the best way to do something. And I never feel like, oh, I've made it. Like, that's never going to be, because it's not even about, of course, we all want to close these large transformational gifts, but it's like, is it sustainable? Is it going to be there long after I'm gone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of things that I helped start at Children's Hospital Los Angeles are still going on. And that,
awesome.
To me, that's like a success to me. And
that's
so I
professional.
Hope, yeah, and I hope that will continue to be my legacy, and that at the end of the day, people will just say, you know, she helped me. That's really it. So.
What advice can you give to someone who's just starting out fundraising? Just one or two points.
I would say, continue to be hungry and to learn. Don't ever think that you know it all, because you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And to take every opportunity that you can to learn every aspect of fundraising, and even outside of fundraising. My job, I also have to
what
learn
does that mean?
All about the programming,
okay.
and, you know, all about how, you know, we, what initiatives that we do, what's our curriculum, you know, how many kids are participating, how many kids we ended up impacting, what's the stats, meaning like, did 75% of our students really accomplish what we thought they were mm-hmm. going to accomplish from the beginning?
Yeah, because so if someone's going to give you money, you have to tell
exactly.
them, your money is going to put 250 kids
exactly.
through this program. Yeah, okay.
So you have to really know the ins and outs. And also, you know, sometimes you have to do things that you may not want to do. You know, I'm doing marketing, I'm doing grants, I'm helping, you know, I'm fundraising, I'm also building a culture of philanthropy. Like, that's a lot. And then, you know, helping to really engage and support our board of directors and also our professionals group. So there's a lot of things within when you talk about being a director of development, especially because I'm at a smaller shop. I'm not at a big shop like it used to be mm-hmm. where, you know, you had an assistant to do this, you had somebody to do research. It's like we're doing it all.
Yeah.
And so in many ways, I feel even that much more successful because I've been able to do, you know, more with less. So
That leads into my next question to you. But like, you know, as a director of development, I know you have to do a lot of presentations. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, are you comfortable public speaking?
I'm comfortable when I am speaking authentically. And when I have practice, when I understand who my audience is going to be, mm-hmm. I don't really like to shoot from the cuff. I wish I could mm-hmm. all the time in terms of things like, you know, if I'm actually going to be speaking to a group full of people. But I mean, I think for the most part I am. When I'm just, because if I think of it as like, oh my God, I'm speaking, then I get really, really, really nervous and all of that, because I always do get nervous. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that I don't get nervous, because
that's
I do.
That's a good sign.
But when I do, I feel at home. And then when I'm speaking about something that I love, it's just even better.
Okay.
You know, so.
Did, yeah. And is this something that you grew into or you concentrated on? Was there a concentrated effort to become a good public speaker?
Concentrated effort. And I wouldn't say grew into, I'm still growing into it, because okay. I can always be better. Am I better than when I first started? Absolutely.
Like, what are some of the, tell me two or three steps that you took to become a better public speaker.
Practice. I would okay. practice in front of the mirror. I would practice, I would actually speak into my recorder on my phone and just listen to myself, make sure I'm enunciating correctly and,
right.
you know, all of those things. And also being flexible, because sometimes you may have a speech prepared, but it may not even go that way. And not...
That is really a really good point.
To you know, get off track, just take a deep breath. And then get back to the point at hand, because you can really, you know, kind of divert your attention.
With somewhere. Events and public speaking, and whenever there's a public involved, you have to just go with the flow. You have
yeah.
to let go, let God, and just, and you know what? With events and public speaking, they don't know behind the scenes. So just
exactly.
let them see the front and smile.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I've had plenty of those. I'm like, what am I talking about? But, you know, once you take a deep breath and you get back to the point at hand, then it's all great.
So, as a woman of color, mm-hmm. have you, what is this life like for a woman of color who's a public speaker, director of development, mother? What's it like?
Being a master navigator.
Nice, Lisa, nice.
Master navigator. There's so many worlds that I have to navigate, and I have to understand all the intricacies. I have to understand, you know, how am I going to be able to get the best result? How am I to present myself? It's just being a master navigator, and also understanding that it takes a lot of energy to do that. Mm-hmm. Even more so than maybe some of our friends that are not, you know, a person of color. It takes a lot of energy, because you really, again, have to, you feel like you have to work even harder than your counterparts in order to, you know, really be successful. And for a long time, that is exactly how I thought. And I'm not saying that I don't think that now, but at this point, I feel that I've done so much in my career. And at this point, it's just for me to show up. Mm-hmm. And still, you know, be disciplined about it, but not worry about anybody else or anything else. It's like I don't have anything more to prove to anybody else. I'm proving things to myself now.
It's a sign of wisdom and growth, definitely,
yeah.
definitely. But I do have to say, being a professional, color, being a woman of color, there is a standard that we have to abide by
yeah.
to be accepted and to our, everyone else is 100%. We have to be 150%. you know, and I've experienced that professionally, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Because I have to be okay with it, because I'm used to just striving and working harder than everyone else just mm-hmm. to be at the status quo. And one day, before I'm put into the ground, it'll be different.
Exactly. And that's exactly,
and it's getting there.
It is. And that's exactly what we're striving for, especially at After School All-Stars Los Angeles. It's not about a handout. It's about we're empowering our students and so that they can be the best them that they can be, and giving them the tools they need to be successful. It's nothing else, because the only thing standing in between them and success is opportunity. So here we are, giving them opportunity.
And you know that event you did at Whittier College that you invited me to come,
yes,
witness, and then Dr. Marla Parker, who seems to be the intersection for all of us.
Right.
We're going to start a Dr. Marla Parker cult very soon.
Right.
That'll be the next podcast. Where she spoke at the event. I was very moved by that event because there were so many young people, and they were really interested.
Yes.
And not just like, oh, I'm here, blah, blah. I mean, you could tell because I was watching them. And even when they were with their peers, they were still focused. There wasn't this like, I'm just going to be bad,
right,
or act up. There was this interest in engagement, and I applaud you and your organization for that.
Thank you. The team at After School All Stars Los Angeles is amazing, and we really set them up for success because they first have to fill out applications and get recommendation letters in order to even be a part of that particular event that you were talking about. So we know that the kids that are there really want to be there.
That's a smart thing to teach them at that age.
And it makes a difference, yeah.
I still have trouble with that now. I'm like, what? Just give it to me. I'm good. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
But like, oh, here's an application. So I have a different question for you right now.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to your kid self?
That I'm enough.
Okay.
That I'm enough. I always felt like I wasn't enough. And then sometimes, you know, that can kind of creep in sometimes. That, you know, when I hear all these people say, oh, I'm the most confident person in the world, I'm like, shut up.
No one's lying.
You know what? You always kind of go back and forth. Definitely not as much as I was back in the day, but that everything that I need, I already have. It's
mm-hmm.
just up to me to like really uncover it and really tap into it. And I didn't know that back then. I mean, it really applies to any part in, you know, part in my life, whether it was relationships or school or work or just anything, that I'm enough. And I know that now, and I'm unapologetic about it.
That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to hear. Yeah, that's been dancing through my mind lately. What would I give to, because, you know, I often talk to the kids and the students here and give them advice from like, from my old woman perspective to like the
mm-hmm.
college age perspective. So it's been kind of in my head right now. So that's great advice.
Yeah.
That's very sound. You're so wise. Well, the next cult's going to be Lisa Baxter cult. So what would you consider yourself? Are you consider yourself an introvert, an extrovert?
Both.
Both.
And the reason I say that is because for my job, I have to put myself out there. I have really, like, you know, I know that I'm doing something that is really lending to my growth, because I may be terrified about it or whatever that is. So I just put myself out there. But introvert in the sense that because I exert so much energy in my everyday life,
mm-hmm.
I need some time to replenish and recharge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding that more and more as I get older, that I just need a lot of me time. And so sometimes that gets a little bit hard, especially with my family, because
yeah.
it's like I just need to sit, and they're like, oh, let's go to the park and do this. And I'm like, man. So it's really trying to figure out what's a good balance between that.
Yeah, being a mom and a wife, that's a whole nother.
There's some other jobs going
mm-hmm.
on, you know. So yeah, it's just figuring, you know, that part out, and just being able to just say, you know what, I'm giving it the best that I got, and that's all I can do.
That's all you can do. And
yeah.
letting go of that. My life lesson right now is learning to let go of the perfectionism that's held me back.
That's huge.
And,
yeah.
that, and this podcast is an example of that, because
mm-hmm.
the older me or the younger me would have been like, no, I got to do this. I got to take this class. I got to study this. I got to buy this. I got to get this microphone. And this time I was just like, F it. Let's do it. And it's been such a gift, and I'm learning so much about people. And then people listening to this podcast get to learn from our experiences. And that's
right.
what I wanted. I want people, the little Lisas and little Amaries and little Kimais
yeah.
and the little Marlas, to listen to this and go, okay, I can do it. They did it.
Exactly. So, and I love that you made that comment, because that was always my problem too. It's like, oh, I have to have everything else. You know, when you talk about being a fundraiser, you know, people get so caught up in the planning, they don't execute. And I got caught up in that for a little bit. I'm like, why is it not working? Because you're not executing your amazing plans, Lisa. So right. I totally get that. So thank you.
So what advice do you have for someone who is nervous engaging people?
You know what? It's just kind of like, be like Nike and just do it. It's, when you go in a networking environment, I always see, especially if I don't know anyone, I always look for that group that looks like the funnest group in the room. And then I just go over to them and I say, hey, I don't know anybody here. You guys look like a really fun group. Can I join you? Mm-hmm. And that's basically how I've kind of been able to navigate that. And always follow up. You know, it's not the other person's job to follow up.
Yes.
Even though it would be nice for them to, like, just, you know, follow up really quickly. I've only had that happen to me a couple of times, and I thought that was amazing. But it is your job to follow up. And also, don't go in thinking that you're trying to gain something from somebody. Go in saying, you know, what resources can I share with them? And whenever you have that, you know, giving mindset, I'm telling you, you're going to get it back tenfold. So that would be my advice. Yeah.
So there's a rumor. We're going to wrap this up. There's a rumor you're writing a book.
You know what? You know what? Yes, I came up with the realization that I'm going to do that, because, you know, once you're involved with a circle of, you know, very educated and upwardly mobile and productive people, it's like, you know, they kind of push you to say, yes, this is what I'm going to do. So, I'm working on that. And I look forward to seeing what comes into fruition for 2019.
Excellent. Well, I just want to say thank you so much, Lisa, for being part of this podcast.
Thank you.
And for staying in my life professionally and personally. You are a gift. And this theme of compassion is running through the people I've been interviewing. And I really celebrate your compassion and your faith in people and in the world and in God. And you're a yes person. And you don't operate in fear. And I really appreciate that. And I admire that. So... thank you, Lisa Baxter, for being part of the Public Words Project. And everyone listening, please share this with your friends. Celebrate Lisa Baxter by listening to this a couple times. Send it to your friends who need motivation and want to be brave and be successful in this world. And thank you so much. Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.